This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 809, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are boosted and also vaccinated and then boosted. Get vaccinated first and then get boosted. That's the order you should do it. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 809. My name is Connor Gilpatrick, and yes, I'm still sick. And sitting in with me, this is exciting. My script says it's Matt Damon, so the numbers should go up.
Oh yeah, it's spelled Matt Damon, but it's actually pronounced Josh Flanagan, and I'd like to apologize for that.
Disappointing.
Yeah, I know. I can never live up to that sort of a alpha male charisma. I know that.
We are iFanboy, and every week we read a bunch of comics. This week there was a lot of comics, and one of us picks the one that I like the best. We call it the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book. That's how we frame the show. And then we talk about other books from the week, and then the patron pick. And then hopefully at least one listener mail. Josh was ambitious and put three in the script.
I like to have choices.
We have a good time while doing it. That's the whole point of the show, is to have a good time. Here's your spoiler warning. There'll probably be some spoilers here. This is a review show after all. But Josh, you had to pick.
I did. Pick of the Week is Fantastic Four number 38. I think it was basically the only contender. I sort of was reading through my books, and I got to Fantastic Four, you know, somewhere in the middle. And I look forward to it. It's a thing. We've talked about that a lot.
Yes, it's one of our favorite
and
books.
I kind of, at the beginning, I thought, I don't really remember where we left off. I felt like things sort of... I just like the big last story sort of ended, and then we're here, and it was just a romp. A man shows up in the lobby, and he basically wants to see the Fantastic Four. He breaks his way and he serves them papers, and you find out it is the Wizard. All of that is done much more imaginatively and interestingly, but basically the kid Bentley 23, who you would remember from the Future Foundation if you read it, or you would just know it because
he's,
of context.
He's also been in the book with he's one of Valeria's friends.
That's apparently a clone, a direct clone of the Wizard, And they go to court, and in order to do so, they call in She-Hulk as their counsel, and she
classic
is no longer
She-Hulk.
Classic She-Hulk. She has reverted.
I mean, we're going to talk about Avengers later in the show, but I was so happy when I turned the page, and it was the classic Jen Walters, you know, attorney at law She-Hulk,
former Fantastic Four member.
Yep.
She was in there, and you know, and they go to court. And that is when I thought, well, this is fun. And then it got way more fun in the courtroom. It's a super-powered judge who is not brooking any of their BS. the wizard, and this cannot be overstated, shows up in his helmet, but also a matching purple suit. And he's not at this point necessarily being evil. He's actually completely right about everything he says about how it's his kid and they're not really qualified to raise a child. It goes through a bunch of different stuff, but it's one of those things like he's not wrong about this. And then the other part that's really fun is that the Fantastic Four are very poorly behaved in court. At one point they get mad about something. Is it El Diablo or just Diablo says, and Sue, they get a shocked look in her face, and Sue says, Ben, you can say it. He's like, really? And he says, it's clobbering time. And he jumps out because he's going to beat up the guy in court. And the judge is having none of it with her Kirby dots and weird powers. And it was extremely silly and such a distraction. I like, you know, we've really enjoyed Dan Slott's Good Old Superheroes. Gosh. Application to this book, but this is like a different thing. It was, you know, it was both funny and zany, and actually at the heart of it there was roots in it with like real issues with these kids and what it would be like. It was just sort of all of those things at once, but it was mostly just a lark. And it's the first part of a story. I don't know how many. I'm hoping two parts, because that's all that really needs to be done here. You know, and it ended with a big fight, you know, and the judge sort of puts everybody in contempt of court and holds them in an energy field. And I had no expectations of it. I didn't, you know, I just started reading it, and, you know, pretty soon it was like, this is fun. You know, I just had a ton of fun with it. And it's what I want if I'm going to read a Fantastic Four book. You know, barely controlled chaos and interpersonal squabbles and people who can't control their emotions and don't always make the right decisions and, you know, very silly villains, preferably purple-based.
I mean, this was a lot of fun. There was some really dubious legal stuff going on here. You know, they're in family court and Jen is their lawyer. And at one point she's sitting in the galley instead of the lawyer's table.
Mm-hmm.
That really bothered me. It's like, what is the editor do anymore? But
none of them
know
how a court
works. You can serve your
own
subpoena in the
well, right. If he represents himself.
But it didn't matter. You were right. It was fun, and it was fun seeing the Fantastic Four just being so totally unhinged in the courtroom. They can't control themselves. They can't control their impulses. Their first impulse is to fight every villain that gets called
and,
in.
You know, they're used to being in control. Their habit is to, you know, be about, and they're not, and it's fun.
And they're not in control against a, first of all, you know, he's a genius too. So he matches the, you know, their strongest asset, which is Reed's brain. And then, as you said, he's not wrong. Mm-hmm. This is his clone who he considers his child. They're constantly putting it in danger. He should be awarded custody. And every legal argument they make, he has a counter for. And so their frustration boils over into violence. It was funny.
Yeah. It was just a really good time. And I think, you know, obviously, like, we keep going back to this, but I just keep appreciating it more than I probably ever have. And, you know, you and I have definitely lean towards the trend of just embracing the silliness, because that's all you can do. If you try to take these too seriously, it falls apart and it's much less fun.
I think we had a very healthy, I'm going to say we were converted, but we were an eye-opening moment reading Super Gods all those years ago. When Grant Morrison said, basically, the more realistic these superhero comics are, the worse they are. Mm-hmm. And we were like, not wrong.
And that just opened the doors to like really sort of look at what it was that's enjoyable about these. And if you are a 40-year-old man and you're reading about superheroes in cartoon form, then you should really think about what it is you want. You know what? No, I don't even mean to put that on others, but like, I'm like, wow, why would I take this seriously? This person is dressed in a purple suit with a crazy helmet, and there's a green lady. It should be very silly and fun, you know? And that's what's making me happy right now.
Right. I mean, there was a couple of problems. Like I mentioned, the whole weird thing in the courtroom where the lawyer's not sitting at the table, but there's a family scene on page 18 of the digital reader where I kept losing Sue and thinking she was Valeria because the artist, Francesco Manna, kept drawing her like a tiny child. Like if you look in that panel, mm-hmm. Sue's on the far left, and I thought that was Valeria.
See, I thought that Valeria, who has the goggles on at least, which is a good indicator. Also, I just noticed Bentley has the same yellow shades on that Wizard does, which is fun. But then next to the blue kid is, I guess, Alicia, who also looks like Sue.
Right. A lot of blonde problems in Marvel. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, you're right. I hope it's not like a six-part thing. Mm-hmm. But they're all being sent off into wherever this superpowered judge's contempt of court is. And you're right. She's nebulous, sort of Kirby dot powers, and she seems to be able to freeze them all from acting,
which is a good job for a judge. And also, I do want to say that you know, regardless of that issue we just talked about, which is sort of a hard thing to work with in telling all the blonde women apart, I think Francesco Manna's, whose name I do not recognize, the energy that was put into this was all like pure Fantastic Four. There's mm-hmm. pages in here where Reed is stretched all over the place, and then the acting that takes place in the courtrooms, I thought was really strong. Like, it's very calm and then sort of explodes into a whole thing. He chose to put in dynamism when it was important and then keep it straight when it wasn't. If you look at the pages, you know, where stuff starts to get exciting, all the panels get canted, there's energy all over the place, and then when they get back to just talking in the courtroom, the panels are leveled out again, you know, and it's chat, you know, and and that, you know, he makes the wizard look like a boring lawyer, you know.
Yeah, you know, a workaday. They all wear the powdered wigs. I think in America they should all wear helmets like the wizard. That's just how you know who the lawyer is.
If I go through this, like, I find something that I really like on every page. There's a, let's say take page 20, and you'll see, you know, the wizard is presenting an argument and he's super serious, and Sue has just had enough of all of it. Like, she's just frustrated and, you know, like, she just feels like she's super annoyed.
Well, you know, we've talked about this before, but they've slowly over the years made Sue the hothead of the group.
Yeah.
You know, she's the one who gets angry fastest. She's the one who here tells Ben to attack the wizard, but also in the past has had them attack Dr. Doom, you know, before the what. Like, she's been the one that sort of goes off the deep end quickest. So the ending here, the cliffhanger is that, you know, Reed and Sue have Valeria and Franklin, and Ben has those two kids, the Skrull and the Kree kid, and there's Bentley. And at the end, she says, basically, I don't think any of you should be parents of any of these kids. So that's the whole cliffhanger. So we're all... Are they all going to lose custody of their kids? Mm-hmm. I mean, they won't, but that's the cliffhanger.
Right. Yeah. And it's been... I just think that Slott has really solidified the persona of the main members of this. And I think that idea about Sue is pretty interesting. The idea of, you know, Reed being distracted to the point of, you know, abuse, basically, is interesting. You know, and, you know, Johnny is... literally flaming out, sort of off the table.
So She-Hulk here is basically taking his slot instead of
and his thing is sort of his penitence for his impetuousness in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what he's wrought himself in, that like he went and he found his soulmate and it was a thing, and then he goes and he sleeps with Victorious and now he can't stop burning. And then at the same time, you've got Ben Grimm, who's the most stable of all the people now.
Right.
You know, he's in a situation that is over his head to a certain extent, but he's happy and he's not in conflict about it. It's just great interpersonal dynamics.
Yeah, this was a good issue, again. Mm-hmm. Good cover, too. From the...
Terry
and Rachel Dodson, yeah.
Let's move ourselves over to the Human Target number 2.
I got dots in here.
No one cares.
So, what did you think of the Human Target book 2 from Tom King and Craig Smallwood?
I liked it an awful lot, but I think it is more of a mood than a compelling story to me right now. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is much more than issue 1.
Yes.
This is a full-on noir PI story. At least this issue is.
You know, and I like that, but it's not like my favorite thing to like revel in. You know, but you're right. Like right across the blinds, making the shadows in his office, you know, that's sort of shaded, and you know, following the dame, and you know, there's a reveal at the end. You know, the writing in this, the personal story, the character building of Ice, this character who most of us probably don't know very well at this point. You know, it's sexy, it's beautiful. But it's more like I like hanging out with it than I am wrapped, you know, with like wondering what's going
to
happen next.
Can we discuss the idea that is presented here that it might be a problem to live above a pizza place or to have your office above a pizza place? I feel like that would be a benefit.
I can't imagine how that would be a problem unless, for example, in that pizza place, there was a frequency of postmen being shoved into it and that would create a problem.
Right. But otherwise, like he says, you know, I put up with the smell because the rent, you know, because he gets the free rent.
Right. But it isn't just that. There's another. He says Luigi isn't exactly what he seems, and I don't know. Something like that. I forget the. I ignore the smell. He ignores the gunshot. Oh, maybe I was thinking that was. His name isn't Luigi, and he's not Italian, but I did a job for him. Well, I thought there was like something else to it.
No, it's just that, he was like. He just did a job for him, so he gets the free rent above the pizza place, and he ignores the smell. I'm like, dude, what smells better than pizza?
See, I was thinking it was some other smell from some other shit that he was up to.
No.
But, okay. Fair enough.
So anyway, he comes back to his office and there is Ice waiting for him. And it is very Raymond Chandler-esque. If you read those books, there's basically two types of women that enter Philip Marlowe's office. One is the femme fatale and one is the innocent girl next door type, and that's what Ice appears to be here, to at least in the beginning, to Christopher Chance. Is she's the nice one. She's she wears, you know, powder blue, and she keeps everything cool with her aura. Now, I don't know where this retcon came in, that she was no longer a goddess of, you know, Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. That she is just some random poor woman that got powers. So that was news to me. I don't know where that came from. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you know, what we talked about before is that Christopher Chance has been poisoned in his guise of protecting Lex Luthor. Somebody tried to kill Lex Luthor and he was poisoned. He's got only weeks to live.
Days. I think it's like 13 days or 12 days or something like that. Yeah.
2 weeks. And
is each issue a day?
I guess.
This was the second day.
Yeah, I guess it will be. Here in the first issue, he found out that the poison came from this planet, and the planet has only been visited by the members of the Justice League International. And so someone on that team must have poisoned him. And, you know, I thought this was incredibly fun. I thought it was sexy without being overt. Like, it was low-key sexy.
Yeah.
You know, as they sort of flirt with each other, but not overtly, and go swimming together.
It's the way that Smallwood is drawing. I mean, this woman who's this, you know, like if you look at her demure facial expressions throughout the whole thing, like it's just like she's just super attractive in that way that seems totally. And it's a way that a lot of artists can do it, but I can't think of any that can do it sort of as well as this. When she comes out like in her bikini, you know, and they're swimming around, she's got a sweet smile on her face, and he's actually very consistent with her face. Like it looks like the same girl throughout. Mm-hmm. It's really beautifully done. And you're like, it's not all about like, you know, butts and huge boobs and whatever, but it's super sexy, you know, in a way that is subtle and sort of elegantly so. And also, you know, that reminds you of an earlier time.
I think you should email Tom King your pull quote for the book, which is, it's not about butts.
I think he'd like that.
We discussed Smallwood before and how amazing he is. I just love, and I talked about this last time, how he allows the tools to show. I know he draws digitally, so it's all sure. fake tools, but I just love that he takes the pencil line and just rubs it down the, like, look at mm-hmm. page 12 on the digital reader where Christopher Chance is helping her out of the car, and the lines on his jacket and the hand. Oh, yeah. Like, it's very, like, overtly, like, this is a pencil drawing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though, again, it's not a pencil drawing, it's digital, but
it's really like because his anatomy is so good that he can let the rest of it be totally impressionistic. And, like, you mm-hmm. know, the colors are not realistic, but they might as well be. Like, he just totally. Puts you in a place. And when I talk to, you know, when I say that mood thing, yeah, I mean, like, he's drawing digitally, but he's using all the same tools that you would have. He didn't use it to make everything look super neat. He used it to make, you know, to play to his strengths, I guess.
Yeah. I liked the description, it was the very next page on 13, about life in the past. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you pay attention to things at all, like, there's a huge amount of 90s nostalgia going on now, and it's pretty sure. clear that it's, you know, the last sort of gasp of, I don't want to say innocence, but before 9/11, things really changed in culture. And so I think a lot of people who weren't alive back then or weren't old enough to appreciate it, look back on that time and with wonder mm-hmm. about what it would have been like to live in a time before all that constant stress and the internet and cell phones. And so a lot of that's here.
But it's also as a parallel, if you look at sort of what the story, what the genre is, this is a pre-Camelot sort of era also that it's depicting. So it's sort of got a parallel going on in both of those things. And when I say yeah. that, post-Camelot, pre, it's 1963, you know, when Kennedy is shot, that's yeah. the other moment. Post-Camelot. And I feel like this is touching both of those things. Tom and I actually talked about that a little bit, without talking about this series at all, but sort of the impact that, you know, like 9/11 as a turning point, you know, in the same way that 1963 would have been. And it's in here.
And I'm not saying this is 90s nostalgia. I'm just saying that feeling of, you know, it was more of a lighthearted time. It was a funny time. Yeah. We were all in danger, but didn't realize it. And we just sort of laughed about it. And, you know, it was. That I just page. Really liked this issue. We're still very early in the process. You know, we don't have a pattern yet. Is it going to be a different Justice League every issue? Mm-hmm. I assume so, but we don't know.
Well, to me, it's interesting because she showed up. So to me, right. that, you know, that he didn't go after anybody. She showed right. up with the thing, so she kickstarts the whole thing, mm-hmm. and that will be. You know, it's very interesting to see what happens next. I like I said, you know. I don't think it is overtly, like, you put it down, you're like, damn. But I think it is the more that you look at it and examine it, and I think as a part of a whole, you know, it's pretty good. And also, like, a few pages into this, I was like, Smallwood definitely has the Eisner locked up already. Like, there's no way he doesn't. Because if we want to really talk about what Tom King's, one of his main great talents is, sure, he's a fine writer and can do all the things, but dude knows how to get artists who are right for what he's doing, who are great and perhaps slightly underappreciated.
And when,
like,
when the
just
masters.
Is. Yep. Yep. 100%.
Daredevil 36.
So I read 35 and 36 because I had a little backlog going on. And a little ways into 35, I thought, I don't know if I'm into this book anymore. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I went through and I read 36. I don't not like it.
Yeah.
I do like it, but I'm kind of not interested. And I'm glad that the paradigm changed where you know, Matt is out of
prison now.
Is out of prison. But I got to say, I think almost one of the most interesting things, I thought Elektra was, as Daredevil, was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Kind of how she was handling it. She had to sort of adjust, you know, how he does things. I'm really sick of Kingpin as mayor.
I actually thought about that. He's been mayor for
really long time.
It feels like 10 years in the books.
Like de Blasio.
There are term limits, you know, in New York. Just FYI, Marvel.
Are there?
Yes. You get two terms. Unless you're Bloomberg, then you get three.
Right, exactly. I think that's where, because it feels like Bloomberg was there forever.
Well, he changed the law, but it's only two terms.
Right. And, you know, I actually really like the part where Kingpin was in a feud with the other super rich, powerful people who kept getting that was fun.
Yeah.
But it's sort of where we are now, like this is the turning point one. Whereas at the end of the last, I was like, I don't know if I want to keep reading this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's things I like about it, but I don't know if I'm really having all that much fun with it.
Now we have multiple Kingpin people.
Yeah.
I struggled with this issue with the art from Manuel Garcia. I thought his facial models were,
yeah,
like, especially for Matt.
Reed Richards is weird.
Yeah, like, it was, the facial model for Matt was way off of what we were used to. And Reed, like, it just, I was like, I kept going back and forth whether I liked it or not. And I don't know.
Yeah, and that's kind of the deal. It's two things I did want to bring up. One, we're having a thing where it's Elektra brings up very clearly the fact that he, everybody knows, doesn't know who he is because some shit went down, and she can tell that because she was dead or whatever. And there's kind of a cool moment at the end where Fisk, you know, is looking through his files after he's now happily married on top of that poor little woman. And, you know, he looks at his Daredevil identity, which he had printed, by the way. He has a folder that says Daredevil identity on it that was clearly like he had somebody print that.
Yeah, he didn't do it himself in a way.
And inside, all the pages are blank. And I think that he realizes that he's missing something. He doesn't know what it is, and he's mad about it. And that, so that will reignite his obsession. But the thing is this, though. Daredevil, or Kingpin, has been the mayor for 1,000 years. He's also been the villain of the book for the whole time. And let's do something else. Yeah. And then finally, this is important. Elektra comes and picks up Matt. Wait, is this the last issue? I might be messing it up. They went for a swim in the river.
No, that was this issue.
That was this one?
Yeah.
What body of flowing water within 200 miles of New York City would you ever put your body into?
Well, prison's going to be way upstate. I was more concerned with the fact that they were skinny dipping right next to the road.
That's what I'm saying.
They're right next. So like anyone driving by is going to see these two very attractive people skinny dipping and, I assume, banging in the water because she says he needs to be baptized.
Then the other bit is no one knows who he is. I'm like, yeah, big red fucking beard. Big red fucking beard. Come on.
Yeah.
There was already, like, people were already suspected. You know, it wasn't like, hey, have you noticed Daredevil has a big red fucking beard? Who's that other guy who we think is always Daredevil but can't prove it, who has red hair?
Yeah.
Do you like his suit?
He's had it for a while. The baggy pants. Yeah. It's all right.
This artist tended to exaggerate it a bit, I think.
That's been through the entire Chip run. He's had these pants. Yeah. So also, this book is monthly, so this has been like 3 years now.
Yeah.
At least. I'm sure there's been delays. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
I don't hate it. And I liked it, but, you know.
Like, if I was to just stop next month, I think I'd be okay, but I would also, like, it comes out and I'm compelled to stop and I'm compelled to read it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't like seeing Ben Reilly everywhere. He's on the cover of the next issue.
Ben Reilly's, that's the big push now.
I hate it. I hate it and him.
I don't hate him. I don't mind the story he's in, but I don't like the idea of it. You know what I mean? But yeah, I also keep threatening to stop reading Amazing Spider-Man, but.
But you don't.
Nope.
They got you by the red beard.
Yeah.
So this was the final issue of the Me You Love in the Dark. Number 5, the Scotty Young, Jorge Corona, their latest miniseries in Image. And I don't think this was a successful miniseries.
I think that the turn that happened in the last issue, which I was not on the show for, I don't know if you guys talked about it.
No, we did not.
The turn was extremely quick.
That's been my problem. Yeah, we didn't earn any of this.
The end of the third issue, they were super in love and everything was great. And then like page one or two of the fourth issue, like shit went down. And I don't think that there was enough of a transition or enough clue that those things were going to happen. It makes sense. I don't think it's wrong as a story point. He's a monster in a ghost in a house, you know, or whatever. But like it seemed less interesting.
Everything that happens tracks. The problem I have is that with 5 issues, there was nothing, the connective tissue wasn't there.
I think that's right.
And the work wasn't there, which sounds like it's a knock on us, Scotty. It's not. It's just that there wasn't time for the work. Mm-hmm. This kind of story needs to be more of a slow burn, like an 8 or a 10. Because, first of all, you have to convince me, why is this woman in love with this scary-looking ghost with a million mouths and eyes and things? Like, that to me was also never fully established. In the mm-hmm. beginning, he was sort of shadowy and romantic, fine. But then, once he's revealed to be what he is physically, I was never sold on the idea that she was still in love with him until the moment he killed her friend.
See, I don't think that it needs to be 8 or 10. I think one more issue in between the third and fourth.
Yeah, it was the middle part. We just jumped past a lot of things that accept.
There wasn't. I mean, you tell me if I'm wrong, but if I was to read the first three issues, I don't really see a lot of warning signs from the villain.
Right, that's my point. There was no work done in the middle, the second act.
So what I thought, I was like, well, maybe because all your expectations are is this is going to go bad, but he seems super swift. So I thought, oh, we're going to subvert expectations. And then the next issue, the first thing that happens is, oh, he's jealous and angry and he won't let her leave. Like that, yeah, that needed to be teased out a little more or introduced early. Like, yeah, there had to be connective tissues. Very good phrase for it.
And this is another example of the five issue, the new five issue mini. In the past, at least mm-hmm. with the six, you had two issues per act, and now it's all sort of cut down. And everyone loves the setup first act bit, and then this third act's where all the action happens. So the second act is what suffers, but that's where all the work's done for the storytelling.
Yeah,
and you know, it's a bad road we're going down. We already went down it with the contracted page count, and now we're losing an entire issue on a lot of these storylines, and it's hurting storytelling.
I'm not willing to say that the number of issues is the problem overall. I'm willing to say that, you know, you have to approach each story on its own and plan it out where it is. Now, it's more likely that it's going to get fitted into a box, you know, that isn't the right size for it now because of all sorts of reasons. But yeah, you got to do it right.
Which is too bad, because I like the first two issues a lot of this mini, but mm-hmm. I think it didn't successfully come together.
I think it was a strong concept. It was interesting. Haunted house, romance, whatever. Yeah. But I think it did a couple of things that were interesting. I think the art between Jorge Corona and Beaulieu on the colors was really strong. You know, this isn't even... I don't normally read books, you know, like horror books or monster books or whatever, but I thought it was... You know, the idea of the blackness and the way that it was depicted and sort of the big crazy monster face.
Right.
But I liked the idea that the big crazy ugly monster face, you know, like that was a good guy kind of for a while. I thought that was interesting. Yeah. I felt bad that all her shit got burned. And I felt bad for her friend. I really felt bad for her friend. He was a good dude. He didn't bring any of this on. They could escape together.
It just didn't come together, I don't think.
Fair enough. Hey, this time of year, nah, I don't want to go that way. go to patreon.com/ifanboy if you like what you're listening to and you want to help contribute to it, just like anything. Media has changed, and this is how you support the things that you like. So here's how we give back in that way. We do the show. We do it happily. We're excited. This all gave us a breath of fresh air, I think, and recommitted us to the thing. But we also added Talksplodes, which are interview shows, Booksplodes, which are both of those are our bi-monthly shows. Booksplodes, we talk about collected editions. Sometimes we go back in history. Sometimes we pick something interesting to talk about that doesn't fit in the confines of our normal show. We have the Mediasplodes, where we talk about stuff that isn't comics. And then we are putting up the YouTube shows as promised at a perfectly regular clip. Regular shows will be all done soon, but the minis still go on for quite a while. And then, of course, there's the Patreon Hangouts. There's a lot of stuff that did not exist before Patreon was a thing for us, and I'm proud of the work that we've done for it. It's turned into quite a lot. The next stretch goal on Patreon, which, by the way, I'm in no hurry for you to get to, is to add a comic book TV show special edition to our roster of shows. And then the bigger one after that would be somehow bringing back our barbecue email and video shows on a quarterly basis. There's also the Patreon Facebook group and the Patreon Discord server. Great communities over there. And then finally, moving on, the other things that there's ifanboy.threadless.com. There are 12 designs, not 11.
There are 12 designs, yes.
the new shirt was revealed on the patron hangout on Saturday.
Hopefully it was.
It will have been. I love time travel.
Yeah.
Okay. So should I not say? Go to ifanboy.threadless.com. You'll see what that is.
There's a good chance there's a new shirt. I think it's there. I'm pretty sure it's there.
This is the worst ad we've ever done. Designs can be applied to t-shirts, shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, probably some kind of underwear, phone covers, bath mats, notebooks, all of that stuff. Skateboards. The Clint is Dead shirt on a skateboard looks quality. Go to ifanboy.com/support for direct donation via PayPal if you don't want to deal with that stuff. ifanboy.com/Amazon will give you links to buy the books from the Booksplodes. Every episode you'll see the music that we use linked, so you could purchase or listen to that if you have that subscription service. And the pick of the week is always, or you can just use that link to go when you're doing your holiday shopping. And by the way, order early this year.
I do want to mention also that we've also partnered with bookshop.org, which is the independent bookstore supporting organization, and so where appropriate, where collected editions are shown, there'll also be bookshop.org links.
Excellent. Let's get us over to Serial number 8 from Terry Moore, and I feel like we talk about this a lot, and I don't have a heck of a lot to say about this issue. I think it's coming together very nicely, but the thing that actually stuck out for me is that the very last panel, I'm sorry, I'm going to it, is basically like a... So what you find out is that the serial killer, the lady, her last victim is going to be her mother because of whatever, unresolved, whatever. And she's threatening her like she's going to kill her with a pair of scissors. And some thunder goes off and you look out into the window and you see the little girl and she's coming to stop the killer or at least kill her or whatever. And they look to the side, and then the last panel is the old comatose mother gets up, and she has a knife in her hand. She's going to stab her, and I thought, that is a hell of a comic book page.
It was terrific storytelling.
Like literally one page that stood out, and I thought, most comic books can't give you that jump surprise thing within a single page. And yeah. I don't know if it is a combination of how he used the blacks, because most pages are not black heavy, but he sort of put this whole scene into the darkness, you know, and then the sound effects take up a large portion of things, and it kind of obscures the last thing that happens, which I don't think you could do with color in this instance. It's a great issue, but I it was just such a good page that I felt I needed to call it out.
Yeah, it was a great page, and this was the issue we found out a lot of the backstory of the killer. I really love this book, and I'm all excited when it comes out. Not 100% sure what's going on, only because it involves the little magical girl from the other series, and it's just that part's sort of confusing. But
She's just a traveling person. She comes across this, you know, quote unquote case, you know, and
she's like the Incredible Hulk. But I think this has been incredible. This has been an incredibly tight and taut 8-issue. I mean, I guess it'll be 9 total, or however many it is, but I really do like it every time it comes out.
Yeah.
There was a lot of, we're in annual territory, a lot of annuals week and next week as well, especially from DC, or all from DC. And my favorite this week was Nightwing 2021 annual, written by Tom Taylor, with art by, how do you say that first name?
I want to say it's a hard, C-A-I-A-N. A lot of times in Irish, that's a hard C?
Right,
that's what I thought. Kean?
Keen.
Yeah.
Tormey and Daniel HDR.
It's high definition resolution.
Right.
Something my television has. I don't know if it's high dynamic, whatever. It's a dumb joke. I'm sorry.
You can see him really well. They tell a brother's story here. So it's Nightwing and Red Hood having to team up on a case, but it also involves a lot of flashback to when the first time they teamed up together, when Jason was first Robin and Alfred calls Dick back at the Titans Tower and says, hey, the new Robin's having trouble. You need to come help him. And Dick says, I don't think Bruce would like that. And Alfred's like, he's not here, so he won't know. So they go off on a mission, you know, sort of older brother or younger brother situation. And it was just really nice parallel storytelling, really nice character stuff. You know, they're all afraid of the original Robin costume. So they give him the original costume, but they give him, like, long trunks. And it just doesn't work design-wise. It looks silly.
I think that the boy panties would have a harder time going. I don't mind it.
It It's just the costume is based on an acrobat's costume, so it looks dumb with long pants. Or not long pants, but long shorts. So, anyway, it's just really nice parallel storytelling between them older and a lot of road between them, and then the younger version of them where Dick is trying to teach Jason how to be a better Robin. There's a lot of nice brotherly ribbing where Jason's wielding a crossbow. He uses a crowbar now instead of guns, which Dick finds fucked up. And he says, well, shouldn't you call yourself the crowbar if that's your name now? Should you dress as a crowbar? Shouldn't you make this shape a lot when you stand? And he just a constant ribbing about it, and it was very funny. So if you're reading a Nightwing book, this is a great little companion piece written by the same writer.
Yeah. Also like it's this weird golden age of Jason Todd.
Yeah.
Like they're adjusting him slightly so he's not the worst.
Yeah, it's tough because he's a killer. And that's sort of the opening sequence where he just walks. But it's not him. It's Clayface pretending to be him.
Right. Well, that's the thing. So, you know, I think they're trying to get away from that, which I think is good. It becomes very difficult for Batman to be accepting of him if he's going around shooting people. Like, you just can't. Sure. So eventually they'll. Right. So you just sort of. They're adjusting it to get that behind it. And by making him not the person in this, I did not expect that. I thought, oh, that's good. That's what I want because it makes it easier to like the character. And you want to like the character because he's not supposed to be evil. So.
Just an asshole.
Yeah. King of Spies number one is a new book from Mark Miller with art by Matteo Scalera, who he did for some time stop.
Right.
But then.
You can't keep him down.
He didn't. You can't. He needs to stop. Somebody needed to stop him, and they did for a little bit, but it wasn't enough.
Right.
This is, I don't think anything amazing, but it was a really fun romp. Basically, like a super spy killer guy goes through his whole life upholding the status quo and making the rich richer and doing the stuff and getting. And then at the end, you know, of his life, when he starts to get older, he's like, I don't think we did all the right things. I'll go fix it because he's dying. Is he dying?
He's got cancer. Okay, yeah. And he doesn't have long to live, so he decides he's going to go get the real bad guys.
Right.
I thought this would have been much, much stronger if he wasn't, like, invincible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in the opening sequence, he jumps off a giant building, shooting 100 guys, and he lands on top of an ambulance, and he's fine, and he gets blown up, and he's fine. Like, if he was a regular guy who was sort of like James Bond wouldn't survive that fall, but James Bond is also not, you know, it's exaggerated. But if it was James Bond level of exaggeration as opposed to like this ridiculous amount of, you know, survives a 100-story drop kind of thing, just make him more of a human. That would be more interesting than this guy who can't be killed. Because he's not a superhero. He's no superpowers.
It didn't bother me because it's sort of big and over. I mean, it's Mark Miller. That's his whole
Don't make it 100% over the top. Make it 50% over the top.
I think if we're talking about a thing that's like a silly revenge tale, which is basically what it is, that doesn't bother me.
I love the second half or the second two-thirds where he's older. He has a magnificent beard.
He does. That's true.
I strive for that level of beard someday. And... you know, I like the idea of this guy who realizes that his life was bullshit. And he, you know, he spent his time feathering his own nest, as he says, and protecting the status quo and the banks and everything, and at the heavy behest of his government. And now all the real villains got away with it. So he's going to go make sure they pay. And I liked it.
It almost goes without saying that Matteo Scalera is a great artist or whatever, but, lots of great action scenes and everything. If you look at the very last page of the book, which is just sort of a shot of London Street with Big Ben in the background at night in the rain, it's a gorgeous piece of art. Yeah. It's like the composition. You could put this on your wall, you know, without even knowing it's a comic book page. You take the lettering out or whatever, and it's a gorgeous piece of art between him and the coloring. But, so you know, you that's what you expect entirely. From him.
Mm-hmm. Did you read The Avengers 750? Or 50.
I don't believe that, by the way. One of those numbers is bullshit. I did, and I got to say, I looked up at one point, and I was like, how long is this? And I looked, and I was on page 25 of 80. I was like, oh, come on! It didn't.
You know, one day there'll be a scholarly paper on how a writer so good as Jason Aaron went so sideways in the Avengers book, and they've been doing it for 50 issues. I didn't dislike this issue. I thought there were good things in it, but it was almost emblematic of the problems. It was so jam-packed full of stuff that it just felt like a whiplash reading this book, going from one mini chapter to the next. I don't care about the Legacy Avengers.
Yeah,
I don't like the idea of it. I don't like everything being a legacy. I don't care about the prehistoric Avengers. I liked the, you know, we get Jen back here. We get She-Hulk back, mm-hmm. So she's now back in this book. You know, sort of being returned to normal. I liked some of the modern day stuff.
But
this is almost the Avengers Forever part. You know, we know that storyline's coming. We just reviewed it on our Booksplode. But at the end, they create a, throughout history, throughout the multiverse, team of Masters of Evil. That was what the name of it was, right?
Something like that.
And so there's a villain version sort of the Avengers Forever. It looks like perhaps Namor might be joining the team. Like, I got excited when they were like, oh, we need to add more people. And I was like, ooh, it's a building the team issue. And that didn't really happen. There were bits and pieces here I liked, but overall I just felt like this is the problem with the book, because there's too much going on. We're never in one place long enough to really care about what's happening. There's 100 million characters in the book, and I don't know.
I don't care about the stuff in the past at all. It's almost because it's at the expense of the stuff in the present.
Yeah.
I actually really like this Avengers team. Mm-hmm. I think the people who are on it are interesting. I really like Ghost Rider's story in this. I find that compelling. I want to know where that's going to go. I like the thing with Gorilla Man and the bear guy. Mm-hmm. I like living in the century. I think that's really interesting. I like Jane Foster as Valkyrie coming in. You know, but anytime we sort of go to the past, I don't care about Kazar. I tried reading that miniseries. It was beautiful, but didn't really mean a heck of a lot to me. Mm-hmm. Kid Thanos smacks a little of, like, when he shows up, it just feels like one of those things that comics have been doing in the past few years to get people excited. Like, you make somebody a kid, or you make him a cat, you know, like, it's fine. You know, these are just takes on villains, basically. Like, what if we mash up the Red Skull and Venom? And what if we, you know, I find it not very interesting. Or at least not in aggregate. Like, there's just so many. They're all that, you know, Supreme Doom and this. But it's too much. It's too much in the sense that, like, you can't, you don't know what to grab onto, which is what you said. Like, you don't get to hang on to anything long enough to give a shit about it. Because we move to the next thing so quickly, and there's so much.
Yeah. I actually really liked the backup story. I don't know why they did it, but it was written by Christopher Rocio, which I've never heard. It's a name I've not heard before. Drawn by Stephen Niven, and it was a Thor and Arthur of the Lionhearted when he was a kid, teaming up against the Brood. Don't know why we did it, but I liked it. I thought it was a good story.
I don't feel like I've seen Steve McNiven interiors in a while. And his style has changed from what it used to look like.
Yes, it has. He's
Thor's face is really odd. I'm not necessarily wrong or bad. It's just kind of, it's different on one page than the rest of it. But I don't know. Maybe it's one of those things, like, it really is heavily dependent on the inkers that he has. Hey, can I make a tiny, tiny complaint?
Sure.
So at the end, he holds his hammer up.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it says the thing, whosoever holds his hammer, if he be worthy, shall possess the power of Thor.
Yeah.
And it's put on there in digital. Yeah. And I hate what it looks like.
Yeah.
That needs to be drawn in by hand. And if the artist is that, like, that's not their talent or whatever, like, figure out a way to do it, because it just is incongruous to me.
It doesn't look good.
You know who could do that? Walt fucking Simonson could do that. He could draw that, and he could do the lettering.
Can
on
do it right
it
now.
Because that's what artists used to do. And I'm not saying they all need to, but I think that's what's one of the more impressive things about sort of Golden and Silver Age artists, is they were also like, oh, yeah, we also know how to draft. They could all letter everything themselves if they wanted to. This is so cool.
So, yeah, this was a weird issue.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird. But I also wanted to mention it, Josh, and I don't want you to answer this question now. I want you to ponder it. And I want you to even ponder it maybe over the break and come back to me.
Well, you're going to have to write something down. We'll never remember to bring campaign.
That's fine. I want to start an underground campaign in which we only refer to the Marvel books by their legacy numbering. No more of this Amazing Spider-Man 80. Amazing Spider-Man 80.
Like in
81.
the show notes and everything. Like we like just refuse to acknowledge. Life. We just refuse to acknowledge the new.
They're
going to
put on the cover. We're going to go back to legacy numbering.
Kent, is it always there? I'm fine with it as long as I don't have to do the research.
For every Marvel book, they have it on the cover.
Okay.
I'm just putting the idea out there. I don't want to get an answer now.
I don't need to think about it. There's nothing about that I don't like. I couldn't sit around for a month and like come up with a reason not to do that. Like, do I care if it confuses people? No, it's already fucking confusing. Nothing makes sense, nothing matters. Do I care about their marketing? No.
Is it pointlessly obstinate? Yes.
As a middle-aged white American man, that's kind of my bailiwick. You know what I mean? that's what we're known for.
All right. So the books we wanted to talk about have come to an end, and now we talk about the patron pick, which is what the patrons vote for at patreon.com/ifanboy. Every patron votes to add a book to the rundown. And we had King of Spies was in the lead on the first day. It had an overwhelming lead, and normally that means it's going to win. But then Wonder Woman Historia, the Amazon's book one, picked up steam, took the lead, never looked back, and was the patron pick. This is a black label book. It's very long. I couldn't even tell you how long it is because visually it says 51 pages, but that includes a lot of double page spreads. It's probably closer to 80 pages.
Something like that.
Written by Kelsey DeConnick, drawn by Phil Jimenez, colors by Hi-Fi and RF Prianto and Romulo Ferrardo Jr. and Clayton Cowles is on letters.
Could the chair please recognize the gentleman from New Hampshire?
Yes.
I'd like to put forward a motion to skip to the next segment.
So this, going into this, it had two strikes, like going into it. Like one, I don't care about the machinations of the gods. I just don't. And that was all that it's always my least favorite part of Wonder Woman stories is, you know, the gods fighting with each other and the stories of the gods. And I just don't care. So
I would take that one bit further and save your second one. Cause I'm agreeing with you. I think that's true, but also I probably would care if there was some sort of invention that made it compelling again. But instead, it really feels like we're treading over the same ground over and over again with this overwrought language of the gods that isn't really anything other than the way that Stan Lee wrote it over and over again. That's the same story. Like, nothing comes out of it that's any different. We've tread this ground so many times, especially in Wonder Woman, and we keep wondering, like, hey, how come Wonder Woman never picks up? Right. The closest they came was Azzarello and Cliff Chang, and even that got tiresome.
Yeah, it's just like the only story that anyone can do with Wonder Woman, and it's just I'm just so bored by Zeus and Hera and all that, you know, just bored. So that was, you know, as this is advertised as sort of like the history of the Amazons, I was like, oh no, I don't care about that. And then just for, quite frankly, I don't like it. I've never liked anything Kelly Sue DeConnick's written. The closest I got was Aquaman. That was kind of dull, and that was also about the machinations of the gods. And I just never really responded to anything she's done. So two strikes going in. The only reason I was reading this at all beforehand, before it was the patron pick, was that I love Phil Jimenez. I haven't seen an interior page from Phil Jimenez in I don't know how long, but for a long time, he's one of my favorite artists. So that was interesting.
And you got to give him credit because this, if I looked at this, I would never tell you, oh, that's Phil Jimenez. He did a whole thing.
Yeah, not till the second part of the story. So this book is basically two halves. The first half is the machinations of the gods. All the female gods are angry at Zeus for the way women have been treated, and they want to break off, and Zeus won't let them. And then their leader Hera decides to chicken out and not go with the other gods. So it's just a lot of that. And then the second half, which is much more, the first half is all double page spreads, and a lot of overwrought language and a lot of people standing around.
I had a big struggle, even like not skimming it. Like it was.
Yeah, well, I think we had two tries. Like I started reading this book well before his patron pick when I thought it was going to be King of Spies. I started reading and I got about four pages in and I went nope, and put it down. And then I had to come back to it because once it became patron pick. And then so starting around on page 26. On your digital readers, about halfway through, is when it becomes more of a traditional comic story, where we meet Hippolyta before she's Hippolyta. She's in Greece. There isn't even a Themyscira at this point yet. And that's when it becomes more traditional storytelling. And that's when I liked it more. Mm-hmm. Like I did not like the first half at all. And I liked the second half more. I thought it was beautiful. I think the whole book is beautiful. We can talk about that in a second. But, you know, it's much more traditional comic book panel-to-panel storytelling as opposed to just a lot of pinups in the first half. And however long this took Phil Jimenez, and I know he's not, I don't think he's drawing this entire thing. I think this is just spectacular work from him. Mm-hmm. And I think the coloring also, there's three colors here. It's very unusual, sort of bright and colorful in a lot of places. And there's just incredible costume design. I think from an art standpoint, I find no fault in this. It's just the story is tough for me.
I mean, yeah, I'm not entirely sure who, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's an audience for this thing, but it seems like what we were talking about earlier when we were talking about Fantastic Four, like I was like, there was just nothing fun about this. It felt a little bit like an armchair version of trying to make social issues get into these Greek gods things, which is, you know, that's fair. That happens with sort of mythologies and stuff like that. But did it really bring anything to the table? I mean, I can't come to this from a perspective of a woman necessarily.
Sure.
But I don't know. It didn't seem all that interesting, you know, or it was so overwrought.
I wonder what this book is like if you chop out the first section. I think it's stronger.
It is stronger. It's still not something I really care about all that much because at the end of the day,
no, it's not your kind of thing, but I think
it's a Wonder Woman book though.
It's just a lot of people posing. It's a lot of people standing mm-hmm. around posing in the first half in double page spreads with
and
very,
it's not a story.
No, it's a lot of super important overwrought dialogue. And it's just like, is this the whole thing? Because I kept looking, it's 54 pages. Is this the whole thing? Is it like this the whole way through? I'm never going to make it. And luckily it didn't.
Same thing.
But
I did. I flipped, because you can see the page view on Comixology. And I was like, oh God, there's panels. Let's just get to that point.
Yeah. And I do think it's a much stronger book. It tells the same things. It talks about the plight of women and how horrible it has been throughout history in the same way, but through a story as opposed to just these gods talking about it, which is much more interesting to me than, you know, the, mm-hmm. the story of the second half is there's a birthing center and this family's had its third daughter and they don't want a third daughter. They can't afford it. Someone with a dowry they can't afford. And so they want to send her off. It's called exposure, you know, to expose one to the world. They put the girl in the basket and send her off on the river with a coin. And if the gods deem
her
worthy, she'll survive. Yeah. And if not, she won't. That's the way they talk.
I liked her justification for that. I liked her justification for that a lot. And then her change of heart. I thought that was maybe the strongest moment in the entire book.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like she, you know, you said, well, we believe in the gods. We believe that if this is happening, it will work out correctly. And then like the reality of everything floods in and she turns around and it's too late. She's failed at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has a real humanity and a thing, you know, to it. So that was strong.
Right. And that's why I thought the second half tells you the same things. Then the first half is unnecessary for me.
Yeah.
And you know, then she, you know, in her desperate attempt to find this little girl, she's running for months and months and months, and runs into some bad dudes, but those dudes are dispatched by one of the tribes, one of the Amazon tribes who live
by badder ladies
in the wilderness.
So, but at the end of the day, is this going to be just like a revenge tale?
I don't know.
Like, do the tough women to turn around and avenge the evil men and then
form
their own society?
Well, at some point they leave. At some point they'll go to Themyscira,
okay.
Which doesn't exist yet. So, I don't know.
But what is that? You know what I think bothered me so much, perhaps more than any other boring comic books that I've read, is that there was so much effort put into so much of it that wasn't rewarding. You know, like that first part, like there was so much effort put into it. They worked really hard on that.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, and it was a slog. It was like prog rock. Like you just.
It was. I mean, like there was some beautiful things here, and the way that he changes his style mm-hmm. and draws, like, you know, pottery from Greece looks like it doesn't look like drawn. Like there's beautiful stuff in here. And at some point, you know, there's like, you know, hieroglyphics that he's like, it's all the work that Jimenez is doing in the first half is just out of this world. It's just not in service of anything interesting.
I mean, but it's still, to me, it you know, that, wow, that's really good. I don't enjoy it at all. So, you know, there's craft versus communication. And you know, he didn't have the skeleton to hang it on. But I also wouldn't be surprised if this book wins Eisner's.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I wonder, like, well, what am I missing? Am I tone deaf? Like, is that what's happening? I don't think so. You know, I'm fairly self-aware, but I didn't get it. I haven't liked most of these history books because they're all, I don't know, they're leaving behind a story to try to frame something that already exists in something perhaps weightier than the material can carry, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't, the first half I was like, oh, I hate this.
Second I was half, ruined by the time I got to the second half.
Second half, I was like, well, that was more interesting. I didn't mind that part. So I'm sort of a mixed bag on this. And I think the art's just spectacular. It's just, I think it's just spectacular. But I've always been a big Phil Jimenez fan, so I'm not sure even how to rate this book.
Mm-hmm.
Ratings.
You have to rate it as a whole.
You have to rate it as a whole. And I was trying to do like math, like break it up. Each section gets its own number, add them together, divided by the number of sections. Like I was trying to really figure this out. And if the, like, I don't even want to take you through my math process. I think where I'm ending up on this out of five is somewhere in the neighborhood of 2.75.
Wow.
I like the second half and the art is beautiful. The first half I didn't like. So I think that ends up around 2.75.
I will just go ahead and say two.
Okay.
No. No, I'm not going to keep reading it.
All right. Patreon.com/iFanboy.
Are you going to read more?
Oh, no, no.
No.
Well, no. Mostly because I don't think Jimenez is drawing any more of it. I think it's a different artist per issue. So mm-hmm. I'm out.
Fair enough.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can vote to add a book to the rundown. But at the $5 or higher level, get your superpower live on the show, like these two.
Old Man Tony.
Oh, boy.
Old Man Tony can speak any language, but only one at a time for a period of 24 hours. So,
I got it.
If he needs to speak Russian, then he can speak Russian for a period of 24 hours in which he knows no other language.
Oh.
And then he reverts back to his native language.
Wait, he doesn't even know language? He just can't, or he can't speak it?
Well, he doesn't know it, can't speak it. He's monolingual.
Interesting.
But can be any language for a 24-hour period.
Huh. All right. Mm. Mm. Interesting. That's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough.
But it's does good he for vacations.
Does he know he doesn't know it?
Yes. Yes, yeah. He can. It's just that he can make the decision. He can say, oh, I'm going to be in Italy, so I will speak Italy for this.
I'll speak Italian.
Yeah. I speak Italy. he will speak it for 24 hours. You know, and he can do it again. You know, right. Like he can, you know, I'm there for 5 days. I can do it every day. But during that time, he does not know English. It's good for travel. It's not so good for, like, say that you're flipping around, right? You're flipping your channels, if that's a thing. Connor, you still do that, but other people don't.
I do that, yeah, all the time, yeah.
And you get to the Korean channel, right?
Sure. You're like,
this is really interesting. I want to know what they're saying. Flips to Korean. Then he's got a day where he can't do shit else in his life unless he goes to Koreatown.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, I would like to know some Spanish so that I could get through those Narcos Mexico episodes without having to pay like rigid attention.
Well, why would you watch a TV show and not pay attention?
Because I don't have time to actually watch a TV show for a long time and only pay. So a lot of stuff I watch is sort of in the background, and I can do that, but I can't do it with subtitles.
It's terrible for you.
No. It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. Like the stuff that I love, I don't do that. But stuff in the middle, it's fine.
Right.
Like, I didn't watch The Wire like that. I don't watch you can't watch Succession like that.
No.
You got to lock into Succession.
Of course. Jakia. Jakia?
It's just Jake. I fat finger.
Jake. Sorry. I was like, Jake, yeah. Is it Jake or Jake A? No. Typo. Jake. Just Jake.
It's a good name. Solid name.
Jake can, on command, produce any plumage you want.
That, by the way, is a joke fully based on the fact that the word plumage is funny.
I mean, if you want to be covered in peacock feathers, eagle feathers, like he can't fly, but he will be covered in the plumage.
Norwegian blue, lovely plumage.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess he could blend in to however birds use that to blend, but.
You know where he would fit in well? Brazil during Carnival.
Exactly. He can go to Carnival. Yeah. He's got the costume. Also, if you need feathers,
are they real feathers? Like would they hold up to DNA testing?
For all intents and purposes, they're real.
I think I heard, I want to say it was a This American Life, about the world of fly tires, like the fishing things.
Yeah.
And like there's a whole trade, and some of it is illicit, in valuable and rare feathers.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, like, he could make a living doing that. Like a good living.
Yes, he could. Yes, absolutely.
Every once in a while, you find out about a subculture, and you're like, I can't believe that. And then I'm like, Josh, you're part of several of those kinds of things.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can get your powers live on the show, like Old Man Tony and Jake A.
Think I'm going to do one.
Yes.
And it's going to be from Dave. And Dave says, at the end of the For Interest Forever episode, no, The Eternals, no. Sorry. You were trying to come up with Avengers who have not been introduced in the movies or TV shows. While I'm sure there are others, some of which you mentioned, one of the most notable missing superheroes has to be Wonder Man. Given that the character has been around since the 9th issue of the original Avengers comic from the 1960s, it baffles me that he's gotten snubbed. That's not really a question, but I figure we can go two places.
That's a good point, and that was one I thought of right after we did that show where we mm-hmm. were going through the Avengers who haven't been in the movies yet, and that was definitely one of them. There's always been, you know, every time a new film comes around, there's always rumors. Everyone was convinced he was going to be in the last film. I don't remember which one that was, mm-hmm. but everyone was convinced he was going to be in one of them. I don't remember which one it was, honestly. But I think that there's one problem with him is the name.
Yeah.
I think that there might be reticence because of Wonder Woman.
I think you could maybe get away with that character and just not really calling him that.
Yeah, like that's what they use way around just call it. Him Simon. But,
and then at some point, somebody will make a joke. You know, yeah. He's a real Wonder Man. And you call, you know, that kind of be it. I think you could do it that way. I mean, I guess you already have Captain Marvel, but like the old Captain Marvel, if there was some way.
Right.
Or,
but Wonder Man is a good one. And I think he's an interesting character. And, you know, Hollywood loves characters about Hollywood. He's an actor. He's a movie star. So, although they just did that with Eternals. So, I don't know. It is a good choice.
It is a good choice. I'm trying to, it's really hard because they kind of blew their load. Like, they all the big ones are out there now. And now when it's like, what are you going to do for the next one? You got a bunch of, you know, I'm not even B teams, but if we've seen they can also make that work.
But that's, you know, the harder thing, I keep going back to Wonder Man. The thing that's interesting is, you know, they changed the Vision's origin for the films, obviously, because there's a lot you had to introduce before that if you were going to do it, the comic origin. And Wonder Man being so inextricably linked to the Vision, and then therefore in a love triangle with the Vision, was very interesting thing about Wonder Man. And so you lose that because he's no longer, you know, the Vision's no longer really using Wonder Man's brainwaves or whatever, his personality, whatever, they did back then. So he loses that connection to the characters.
What's really interesting is that at some point Wonder Man died. He died a couple times, but like when he transformed into like his ionic.
Well, he's a man made of power, right? So he's a man of right. He's not like a real, so he can't really die.
I never really understood that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things, like, they talk about it, and I'm like, I'm not sure what that is or why. So I just kind of skip past it. But it's almost like they're trying to say, like, he's like a thing. He's kind of not a human anymore. And I don't think that really stuck. I don't think that really works.
Yeah, he has been... I always liked Wonder Man growing up in those Avengers mm-hmm. books. He was a big part of all those books. You know, his friendship with the Beast was awesome. Like, I always liked him. And then I liked his, you know, I liked him in the West Coast Avengers. I read his solo book. Like, I was always a Wonder Man fan. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, it just feels like they didn't know what to do with him anymore. And they made him pacifist. And that got really stupid and boring. Because every time he'd show up, he'd be like, we don't have to fight. He'd be like, this is a book about fighting. You know, like.
I think, you know, one of the things that sort of happened almost as in the first wave of sort of Netflix Marvel shows and Hulu and whatever they were putting them on, they used up a bunch of those characters that they should, you know, yeah. like it'd be cool if they had them around, like, you know, Cloak and Dagger or even Daredevil. How about this one? Jim Hammond. Now that's going to create confusion with if there's a Fantastic Four movie coming out or whatever, right. But
they sort of missed their chance. I mean, he has that cameo in the background of the first Captain America film in the World's Fair, but mm-hmm. They kind of missed their chance.
That'd be a great character because that's like Marvel, you know, Marvel Comics number one. It's the Human Torch. He's right on there.
Simon is made of ionic energy.
Yeah, that was just like a thing at one point. Like, he's not human anymore. And I was like, right. Oh, I don't know what that gives me. Like, they're not really playing into like, but he also kind of always was, he's kind of always a sad sack character. In a way, or at least that's when he was most compelling, I guess. But I don't know. They don't need that in Marvel.
He was such a pillar of the team for so long.
Sure.
And then they made him, you know, then they
didn't know what to do with him. And so they started throwing a bunch of shit at the wall, hoping it would stick. And instead, it just muddled the character to a certain extent. And now his biggest thing, and I'm not immune to this, is like, oh, he's wearing the safari jacket. You're like, that's the exciting thing about him, which shouldn't necessarily be the case.
I they could totally do him in the films or TV shows. They just haven't done him for whatever reason, and I don't know what that is. But it's a good one. Dave was totally right. It's a good one. He's been around since issue 9. You know, Cap's only been on the team since issue 4, so he's only beat him by 5 issues.
Yeah, I think Cap may have made a larger impact.
I get you. I'm saying he's a long time character on the team.
It's true. And he's got a cool, ridiculous comic book origin story.
Yeah.
You know, like his brother is a super villain and he was trying to get him resurrected and he was a villain and then he wasn't. Back then, a lot of folks were villains before they were heroes. It was like Wonder Man, Hawkeye, Vision, and Scarlet Witch. Not Vision, Quicksilver, Scarlet Witch. Like that was a thing. You started off as a bad guy and you became a good guy, which is very interesting how often that happened during that time period.
Yeah, I just think about like the dynamic. I always think about the dynamics in an Avengers team. Like a guy whose brother is a supervillain, mm-hmm. who is a movie star, and therefore you can play around with those jokes a lot. Like that's all that could be interesting on the team.
The movie star superhero, I think, has that been?
Well, again, really like been the Eternals, they did it with Eternals.
Nah, but who cares? That's not going to be remembered. It's not in the Avengers, you know, and right. Also, we're talking about Kumail, I guess. So, but he was sort of famous in part of the world, but not the whole world. He's not Brad Pitt. He's something else. So you could get away with it. I did a pitch once about like a Brad Pitt type character who was also like a super spy.
Mm-hmm. It was the idea. They did that book. In.
Yeah, I know they did it later, but I wrote that pitch before that. I have the documents to prove it.
All right. Contact@fanboy.com. You can write us in for this show or for the Media Explode. If it's for the Media Explode, write it Media Explode in the title or the subject line. And thanks for everyone who wrote in. Let's talk about the end of the year quickly before we wrap up. So we've had a lot of shows between the last couple of weeks. We have a lot of shows to put out. We've put out already our Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings review, our Eternals review, our final Media Explode of the year, And just behind the show, this past week, our books blowed on Avengers Forever that Josh and I talked about, had great fun reading, great fun reviewing. So those shows are all back on the feed. We still have more shows coming out. We only have one more Pick of the Week show this year, but we have four more shows coming out. Next week, or this coming week, we have our final book explored of the year on The Death of Captain Marvel, which the classic Marvel story, which neither of us had read before, so we're going to talk about that.
And we're talking about the version that just came out relatively recently, and it contains basically three stories, and I very much recommend that you read that version if you can. It's available digitally. I'm sure you can get the book, but it's got sort of the intro of Captain Marvel and then sort of a story from the middle, an Al Milgram story, I think, and then the sort of a graphic novella, The Death of Captain Marvel. Yeah. And I think that those things all work really well together.
So check that out. That's coming out this week. And then on December 12th will be the final pick of the week, Pick of the Week 810. Well, that's our final pick of the year. Somewhere in there, there'll be a Talksplode.
Yes.
No comment from Josh.
It got delayed because of family stuff, not on my side. We're supposed to record it this week.
So that should be coming out on the 16th. And then our traditional final show of the year, our all-media year-end roundup, comes out on December 18th. And that'll take you through the holiday season. We'll be back on January 9th, Pick Week 8-11. And then sometime in January, we'll be covering Spider-Man... No Way Home? Is that the title of the movie?
Yeah,
anyway,
the
Spider-Man film that's coming out before the holidays, we'll be covering in January because we're taking a break. And also, who knows what's going on with the Omicron variant and all this stuff. So, should we get to see it, we'll be covering in January.
Fair enough. Because we'll see it at some point.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm excited for it.
It's all good. Yeah.
I love the Spider-Man movies.
Go to iFanboy.com. You can find all of our shows and the history of comic book writing that we've done from all the many writers who we have employed to provide that. We kept it all there. And trust me, they're making as much money from it as we are. That's a joke. You can go to Facebook.com/iFanboy or follow @iFanboy on Twitter, @iFanboyComics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out so you can be prepared. You can follow us individually on Instagram at C.S. Kilpatrick or J.A. Flanagan. You can subscribe to our YouTube page over at YouTube.com/iFanboy, which makes perfect sense. We were able to get that because we got it a long time ago. This last week, there was a mini pick of the week, Powers number 29. Was that me?
Yes.
It feels like a me. Yep. I like how you can just look at the book title and be like, I know who did this.
Well, we all loved Powers and picked it, all of us, but that was
it. It's true, but at the later point, I think that I liked it more than, I think I was trying to like it more than you guys were at that point. That's my guess.
Possible.
Not early on, the first sort of chunk of it, the first volume of it, everybody was super into it, but it lost steam over the years, and I didn't want to let go. Then there's two shows from San Diego Comic-Con 2010, which is a painful 11 years ago. There's Robert Kirkman. We just did a whole episode talking to him, our pal.
That was, I think, right before the show launched, so that was like the last pure interview with him.
Right. Yeah, he was pre-Bobby Hollywood.
I think this one's the one you started calling him Bobby Hollywood as a joke.
Fair enough.
But I don't remember. I didn't watch it, so I don't know. But I just remember it was you and Ron interviewing him together.
And then San Diego Comic-Con 2010, part one. So we used to go to the show, and we would do interviews the whole time, and then we split them up into a couple of shows. And so the first part was a bunch of interviews with people who I don't remember who they were, who are much older now. And then the first was just, you know, we do one Robert Kirkman show every time. That was kind of the deal.
And that was we had a whole crew. We had Mike Romo. We did this. That was the sitcom open show.
Oh, nice.
So that we had Mike Romo and a bunch of people. But that was one of our last one. I think the next year was our last one. 2011 was our last. I think so. Anyway, as I said before. The last upload of the full-length show will happen on New Year's Eve. And then we're done with full-length shows. And then I did some quick back-of-the-math, envelope math, and I think we have enough minis for about half of next year. So there'll still be new minis coming out for people.
Why do they say back-of-the-napkin? Isn't a napkin normally either side? There's no front.
Well, because usually if you're at like a nice bar... There's like a logo on the napkin on one side.
Fair.
So you need the room, so you flip it over.
You're dining at the Regal Beagle.
Right. You flip it
and
over.
You need to write down
a
phone number.
Doesn't happen quite as often, but, you know, the places where businessmen went to have martini lunches would have logos on them. Anyway, let's finish the show. If you like the show, please leave a review or a star rating on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, wherever, whichever aggregator you use, Spotify. I don't even know if they do ratings and reviews on Spotify, but, you know, wherever you listen, if you can leave a rating or review, it would help the show. We do appreciate that. That's for any show you listen to. And word of mouth is great. People ask about podcasts. We always appreciate when people mention our show. We just thank you for helping spread the word. We do really appreciate it. And we are finished. Our second to last show of the year. We'll be back next week with our final show of the year. Until then, I'm Connor.
I am Matt Damon.
You sound just like Josh.
Matt Damon's an excellent actor.
Now you're talking about yourself in the third person. This has all been fascinating.
Wouldn't you?
We're happy tonight. We're walking in a winter wonderland.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.